the second part of our series of the 69 prophecies still that must be fulfilled before the second coming of the Lord. With the doors of the seven churches of the Revelation closed, the things which are, according to the Lord, are no more. Prophecies can continue to be fulfilled. And in chapter 4 of the Revelation, we find this statement. After these things I looked, and behold, a door standing open in heaven. And the first voice which I had heard, like the sound of a trumpet speaking with me, said, "Come up here, and I will show you what must take place after these things." Notice in the Gentile storyline, the inclusion of Seal 1 having been completed. I left that with you in our last part. In Revelation chapter 4, John describes the glories of what he is seeing in heaven. In chapter 5, John describes the book that he sees, which has seven seals. In chapter 6, John describes what happens when the Lord opens each seal. And this brings us to Seal 1, and John describes what he saw with the breaking of this seal. "Then I saw when the Lamb broke one of the seven seals, and I heard one of the four living creatures saying, as with a voice of thunder, 'Come,' and I looked, and behold, a white horse, and he who sat on it had a bow, and a crown was given to him, and he went out conquering and to conquer." Revelation 6, 1 through 2. The white horse which goes out to conquer has a bow, but he does not have any arrows, and he does not have any deadly ammunition. He goes out simply to conquer the world, not by war, but he has to go out by influence. It's the only thing he can, and he's given a crown. Influence is the way to change the thinking of people. Now, in America, various politicians have risen in the ranks, and people call them, catch the term, white horse saviors or white horse messiahs, who can turn a government around or a direction in a society around if they are put in a position of power. Ronald Reagan was just such a person. This passage in the Revelation is the origin of that term, the white horse savior or the white horse messiah. Now, back 400 years ago in the 1600s, the idea of a democratic socialism began to resurge. I say began to resurge because it was a philosophy of government and society that showed its ugly head all the way back at the Tower of Babel after they came off the ark after the flood in Genesis 11. If you remember back then, when they decided they were going to live together, they were going to build a tower to God, the Lord brought an end to that quickly, and He brought an end to that socialism government. Now, in the 1600s, 400 years ago, it controlled Germany and France, and it was even imported into the Americas at first. And you say, whoa, wait a minute. When was it imported? Well, if you remember, William Bradford embraced the concept with his group that he brought to Plymouth Colony in America. And under Bradford, everyone was supposed to own everything, and everybody was to share everything. It was to be America's model. It lasted less than 18 months, less than a year and a half. And William Bradford basically said, this is not going to work because we have a few people who work and do everything, but most of the people here are lazy and they want handouts. So he abandoned the whole idea of the democratic socialism concept and went to a capitalistic concept. Now, the French Revolution of 1789 to 1799 was all about changing their government into a democratic, socialistic society of socialism, where the state had the common ownership of everything. Karl Marx was a proponent of the philosophy, and in 1848, he wrote a pamphlet entitled The Communist Manifesto. Now, I know when you hear the word communist, you think, oh, bad people, but you have to understand where that word came from. It came from the democratic socialist model. because the word communist comes from two words, or should I say a word and then a suffix. The commune means common. It means publicly owned and free. That's what it meant back in the 1800s, 1600s, and later on. Commune means common to everyone, free and owned by everyone. And the suffix ist means the one who does or the one who makes. So the word communist means the one who makes everything publicly owned. That's what it means. And so the word, by the way, did not exist, but was first coined by John Goodwin Barmby, B-A-R-M-B-Y, who lived from 1820 to 1881. The word was picked up from his writings and put into the writings of Karl Marx, who used it, and he wrote his Communist Manifesto. In other words, communist, the one who makes everything the owner, to own everything, manifesto. This is where we want to go. This is where we're headed. In other words, the word manifesto. The manifesto denied the existence of God. He was headed towards a world society without God. And Karl Marx's books still have influence in the world to this day. But he was not the White Horse Rider. And because he did not have a crown, Marx drafted the documents, but a king-like figure was needed to implement this philosophy. World War I came, and in 1914, Russia was an ally with America in fighting the Germans. But in 1917, Nicholas II, who was an ally with America, was the ruler of the King of the North. Although he caused great trouble for the church in Russia, where he was the king, he believed in God and he believed in the church, and the church was open to everyone. And that year, his family was captured and killed in the Russian Revolution that started in 1917. A provisional socialistic government was established with disagreeing parties because they couldn't decide who was going to take the lead. But 4 months later, an unknown rose up through the ranks and was given the authority to take charge in Russia, and he was given a crown as the leader of the Union of the Soviet Socialist Republic, and his name was Vladimir Lenin. Well, in his 1918 decree, he decreed that everything and every plot of land, every inch of land, was owned by the Russian socialistic government. And he also took all ownership of all the property of the Orthodox Church there in Russia. He installed communism in Russia. Common. Everything is owned by the state. And from there, Lenin followed Marx's outline to the T. The church in Russia was outlawed, just as Karl Marx's outline would wanted it to be. And his decree deprived the church of its status as a legal personhood, the right to own property, or to teach religion in either state or private schools, or to any group of minors or anyone. God did not exist in Lenin's world. But just 7 years later, Lenin was dead. But the damage had been done. Russia was Marxist to the bone. Russia was a godless country. Christians lived in fear. In fact, I want to tell you, he was so influential that in 1994, just 2 decades ago, a man by the name of Volkogovna said about this, about Lenin, "There can scarcely have been another man in history who managed so profoundly to change so large a society on such a scale." Russia and France, because they were allies with America in World War I, began seeing that many of their population wanted to come to America to immigrate, and they immigrated here, as well as the Germans who immigrated here. And you have to remember also, under Adolf Hitler, he was headed towards a socialistic, democratic socialism also, and they began to come to America. And when they came to America, they brought their Marxist communist beliefs with them. They also moved, by the way, into England, besides America, where their influence formed what was called the God is Dead movement. And that movement was German in its origin from 1882 by a man by the name of Friedrich Nietzsche, it was energized in the colleges, in the universities. That's where they decided that God was dead, and they began teaching it there in the institutes of higher learning. It too would be imported into America. By the time of the last Church of the Revelation closed its doors in 1922, Lenin had fully established his intent to change the world. You catch that? The last door of the Church of Thyatira, the last of the seven churches, closed in 1922, and Lenin had instituted it all, and it was fully in place by 1924. He died in 1924, and 10 years later, over here in America, in 1933, a group of American ministers from the Unity Church, the Unitarian Church, and the Universalist Church had gotten their degrees from over in England. Here in America, they band together and they wrote the Humanist Manifesto I in America with the intent of changing America into a Marxist, communist, godless society as Lenin did in Russia. Their plan did not immediately gain acceptance. Then they saw the philosophy success over in the England colleges, and they came to the conclusion that the only way to accomplish their goal in America was to take their plan out of the pulpits, which is where it was, and place it in the institutes of higher learning. And they began to become professors in the colleges and the universities. Well, by 1973, they had infiltrated the institution strongly, and the foundation was well established to accomplish their goals through the universities and the colleges. And in fact, in 1973, the Humanist Society wrote the Humanist Manifesto II, and this time, the majority of the signers were not ministers, they were Marxist professors. These men knew that if they could take this to the colleges and the universities, soon the graduating students would filter their Marxist socialistic philosophy down through the educational system, all the way through high school, junior high, elementary school, and down to the preschool classrooms. And eventually, with their influence, it would go back to the boardrooms and to the workplace and to the pulpits even, and then into the pews, and on to every country, every tongue, and village in the world. And it worked. Like the frogs that jumped into the pot of cold water which had just been placed on the fire, the frogs did not realize the rising heat would boil them to death. In short, the White Horse Rider had ridden in the name of Vladimir Lenin, who started it all with his crown and his bow and no more God. He did it without ammunition. He did it with law. Seal 1 was opened by the Lord, and a king rode and set on its path to conquer the world with a godless philosophy. It has changed the thinkings of all philosophies, get this, except for those controlled by Islam, the great apostasy spoken of in the New Testament by Paul. Yet, when you look at Islam, the traits and the social structures are the same as communism, socialism, where the higher-ups, the few, own everything. I want to challenge each of you to read the 1933 Humanist Manifesto 1 and the 1973 Humanist Manifesto 2. Just look it up online and you can go and you can see it and you can read it. It will make you sick to your stomach, because you'll turn around and you'll say, this is America today. This is Venezuela today, and every place where socialism is, you'll say, this is where it is. You'll be sick to your stomach. Well, it was all planned. Now we continue with the 69 prophecies that must be fulfilled before the second coming of the Lord. Prophecy number 1. The 10 toes of Nebuchadnezzar's dream must become a united empire to fulfill the prophecy. Those 10 toes are Britain without Scotland and Ireland. They've got to leave Britain. France, Spain, but with Portugal as one country. Spain and Portugal have to be one country again. Italy, North Africa. Well, North Africa, four countries have to come back together. That's Morocco, Algeria, Tanzania, and Libya. They must reunite as one country before they become part of this empire. Greece is already there. Macedonia, New Macedonia, became New Macedonia in 2022. But this modern Macedonia must join back with, get this, Bulgaria, Albania, Serbia, Kosovo. They all must reunite back into one country before they can be part of this 10 toes of Nebuchadnezzar's dream. To that we add Turkey, Syria, and Egypt. That's Daniel chapter 2, chapter 7, and chapter 8. To fulfill Nebuchadnezzar's dream, during the formation of the 10 toes into one empire, three of the kings of those countries will reject the union. They will not want to be part of it, and they will be killed. No one will be installed in their place as a king. And Daniel describes this evil empire as a seven-headed beast with 10 horns, 10 countries, and one supreme president whom himself is also called a beast. Now note here, the empire is called a beast and the supreme leader is called a beast in the Revelation. So those two beasts, one is the empire and one is the supreme leader. Prophecy number two on the Gentile line. Colonies of humans must begin living among the stars and under the surface of the oceans in permanent homes with an emphasis there on permanent. That's in Obadiah 4:4 and Amos 9:2-3. This prophecy is quickly moving towards fulfillment. It's not there yet, but I promise you it will be there soon, within probably the next 20 to 40 years. Prophecy number three on the Gentile line. This new empire will be led by one president and seven vice presidents, and get this, here's the new part, a Muslim false prophet to guide the spiritual aspect of the empire. That's in Daniel 7, in Revelation 13, 11, and 12. Prophecy 4, Gentile line, seal number 2. The red horse goes out to take peace from the world. Revelation 6, 3-4. Many theologians see this to be a war because of the mention of a great sword used to slay others. I once agreed with that. However, in light of the recent COVID phenomenon, I must ask, what could that great sword actually be? You see, already in the Revelation, John has made it plain in the scripture that the sword of the Lord is not a real sword, but it's the Word of God. It's not a real sword. So John made that clear in Revelation chapter 1 when he describes this sword coming from the mouth of the Lord. Therefore, I have to ask the question, could this sword in this seal not be a sword, but something maybe like an injection needle that would cause maybe sterility or birth defects or bodily systems to fail? After all, the COVID virus started in its spread from where? From Red China. It doesn't matter where it was developed. Where did it start the spread from? And it came from Red China. It is the red horse, by the way, and it's been 100 years since the demise of the last church of the Revelation. We're in 2022. That was 1922. It's been 100 years since the onslaught of the successful attempt to create a godless world by the white horse rider. This bug has definitely taken peace from the world and will continue with side effects, great heartaches in the side effects. In addition, many have died from the treatments used to try to cure this bug. And time will only tell if this bug has affected life and death as well as all the side effects associated with it. We will have to wait for the history to be written to understand if this bug from Red China is seal number two, and is this the red horse rider that rode? It may be. We don't know when it's happening, because that's the nature of many of these prophecies. All through Daniel's prophecies and everything, we had to wait for the history books to write the history of what the people were doing without knowing they were fulfilling history. So we come to prophecy number five, seal number three. The black horse goes out to bring poverty to the world. Revelation 6, 5 through 6. World history will tell us the identity of this rider also after he has begun to ride. But we cannot speculate on his origin at this point in time, because one thing is for sure, the effects of his ride will not be immediately known. It will take time, just like seal 1 and seal 2 took time. Prophecy number 6. Seal number 4 in the Gentile line. The green horse goes out to bring massive death in the world. Revelation 6, 5 through 6. Now, we cannot speculate on this origin either. However, when he rides, 1/4 of the population of the world will die from weapons, from famine, from pestilence, and wild beast. Listen, today's estimate of the world population is 7.6 billion. 1/4 of the world today, if this was to occur today, means that 1.9 billion people would need to die to fulfill this prophecy. Again, we will have to wait for history to record who this rider is. Prophecy number 7. On the Gentile line, you see this seal number 5. From under the altar, many souls cry out to heaven. How long this prophecy will be fulfilled in heaven after seal 4, after 1.9 million people, if it was to happen today, have died, it will be fulfilled. But while the 1.9 are dying, this cry from heaven comes and says, how long? Seal 5 is a cry that will end when seal 4 comes quickly. But it will not come quickly, because it takes time for pestilence and all that to kill what might be more than 1.9 million people. Prophecy number 8 on the Gentile line, seal number 6. The earth quakes, the demonic angels fall to earth. Revelation 6, 12 through 17. Satan will no longer have access to heaven and the throne of God. This seal will be fulfilled after seal 4 is completed on earth, and the question found in seal 5 has been asked, and the answer has come that all have died. Satan will no longer be at the throne to make accusations as to why a Christian should not be allowed in heaven. Prophecy number 9 on the Jew line, as part of seal 6, the sealing of the 144,000 Jews here on earth, Revelation chapter 7, verses 1 through 8. They are protected by the Lord from all harm that is to come upon all humanity in the tribulation that will soon begin. They cannot die from the pestilence and the wild beast that have been let go back in seal number 4 that is still going on, if that's part of this. Prophecy number 10 on the church line, part of seal 6. The rapture of the church, Revelation 7, 9 through 17. You don't see the word rapture there, but let me explain it to you. John had just turned his head from looking at the sealing of 144,000 Jews from the 12 tribes down on earth, and he turns his head back to heaven, where he sees the arrival of a multitude dressed in white robes with palm branches and prays for their salvation in heaven, and that's the church. These are the people of earth rescued from the coming tribulation. Daniel 12, 1, Matthew 24, 21, Mark 13, 9. These are not martyrs of the tribulation. It has not started yet. The tribulation has not started yet. These are rescued out of the great tribulation, meaning they would not go through the great tribulation or any part of it. How do we know that? And how do we know this? For the saints, they will be raptured. Because they are raptured, they will not stand before the judgment seat of God, where Satan is the accuser, because Satan is no longer there to accuse them. They will go directly to the marriage chamber with the Lord. Listen to what the Lord tells Daniel about this. Now at that time, Michael the great prince, who stands guard over the sons of your people, will arise. That means he's going to take his protection off of Israel. And there will be a great time of distress such as never occurred since there was a nation until that time. And at that time, your people, everyone who is found written in the book, will be rescued. Many of those who sleep in the dust of the ground will awake, these to everlasting life, but the others to disgrace and everlasting contempt. When the bodies asleep in the dust awake to everlasting life, that is the rapture. When the bodies asleep in the dust awake to everlasting contempt, that is the great white throne judgment. Daniel's entry is a summary of three things to come. The rapture, that's the resurrection of the saved saints to life. The coming of the tribulation of Israel, and the resurrection of the lost sinners to eternal death. And when seal 7 is broken, heaven becomes silent. And I must end this lesson with this question. What in the world does that mean when it says there was silence?